John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I love them. I can't get enough of them.
What we gonna do right here is go back. Back into time.
Getting back to his feet, but Neil has a high-level guillotine, and this could be over.
Go, 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 go.
And Dwayne Ludwig is out, so Josh Neal. A humongous win for Josh Neal as he gets the submission, the seventh submission win of his career.
I am going to do something about these two stoner f***s I should have done a long time ago.
Got a report of two guys hanging around outside a store selling pot. You don't smoke pot, yo.
John Anik and Kenny Florian.
TJ DeSantis trying to give me chills, bringing back those Ken Flo calls is what he's trying to do. Man, that L.A. to Australia leg just never gets shorter, Ken Flo.
Dude, it's brutal, man. It really is. Like, the cross-country flight for me is tough, right? I haven't been doing a lot of international travel. But you didn't just do the cross-country flight, dude. You went Australia to L.A., and then you still got to travel across the United States of America. That is ridiculous, dude. I'm glad you're still awake.
Barely. Well, hey, we have to fit it in because DeSantis has Invicta FC duty, so he's got to bounce on out of here. So, hey,
yes,
Monday
sir.
Night, we got to get the show in the can. It's a big week, obviously, recapping 234 and spinning this thing ahead to Phoenix. Good to be back in the United States of America, though. I mean, Australia is one of the most beautiful places in the world. I think we'd all go a lot more often if it wasn't so goddamn far away. To travel that far to do a live event is it insanity? I don't know what it is. It's just to go and make that quick turn.
Yeah.
If you got kids or circumstances that don't allow you to extend the trip, is bananas. But it is good to be with you. It is episode 190 of the Anik and Florian podcast, Monday night, the 11th of February, 2019, where we are. This is the first true primetime show in the history of the Anik and Florian podcast. We teased it a few weeks ago when Longo was, you know, early bird dinner time for the 60 plus crowd. But this is the first true primetime episode. What a crazy week, Flo. You know, what a crazy fight day.
Oof.
So we've had a lot of different circumstances, and I think our entire UFC staff, the live production team, and everybody else has become conditioned to unforeseen circumstances. I think it was UFC 213 when Amanda Nunes had to pull out day of. But this situation with Robert Whittaker, given how few hours there were before the show, presented us with a lot of different challenges that I'll touch on probably throughout our show today. But I want to start with obviously Robert Whittaker, because this is just a crazy circumstance for this athlete. And I know he had a pretty serious infection, Ken Flo, not all that long ago. He wasn't able to compete in Perth due to injury. So if you're listening to us, almost assuredly by now, you know that he was forced to withdraw from the scheduled title defense against Kelvin Gastelum on fight day. And here was the statement from Whittaker's team. Last night, roughly 9 p.m., Rob began feeling intense abdominal pains that were brought to the attention of the UFC doctors. After several hours of observation, he was admitted to the hospital at 3 a.m. Rob is just out of dual surgery for a twisted and collapsed bowel in addition to an internal hernia of the intestine and will be recovering in the hospital for several days. He has spoken directly to his fans since, so I encourage you all to go on his Instagram page. If we were still on video, you would see Ken Flo wincing at the nature of the injury. And I don't know if you're wincing because you're thinking about, you know, fighting after that, right? Given all that's going on in your system. But thankfully, disaster was averted. He went into emergency surgery and seemingly he'll be able to fight another day.
I'm thinking about, first of all, the circumstances of that. I'm thinking about the pain involved with something like that. Having to make that decision. I'm thinking about the UFC having to make that decision. I'm thinking about the bad luck that he has in Australia with these big UFC fights. This is terrible. Robert Whittaker was a guy that really could have created a hell of a lot of momentum with a title defense here.
Yeah, man.
And he just was never given the opportunity. And I remember I was just incredulous when someone told me, one of my buddies texted me, said, hey, the Whittaker fight is off. I said, what? Are you joking? He said, yep. Looks like a hernia or something. And I just couldn't believe it. But it was terrible because, you know, if I'm being candid, the UFC and that card really needed that fight. I think it really hurt that pay-per-view, and it was unfortunate for everybody.
So Rob's statement went on to say, up until 5 minutes before going into surgery, Rob was insisting he would fight, but advice was that a blow to his stomach could be fatal. Rob will come back stronger and ready for what is to come. Thanks to the UFC, Kelvin and his team, for your professionalism. And obviously the medical team, Brianna and Dr. Davidson, who's now sick as a dog, by the way. Just the whole staff. Got to shout everybody out. Zach Candido, the entire live production team. I mean, dude, I went to the arena and I sat down at the broadcast table. And Kenny, you're all too familiar with this process, but, you know, sat there banging keys, redoing my scripts for 2 hours. You know, I mean, it was just a crazy, crazy situation. And for Robert Whittaker, thank God he didn't compete. I guess I just wonder going forward, right? This was, I guess, a 3.5 hour surgery flow. So pretty invasive thing. Whittaker was in the shape of his life, man. And you're right. Potentially ready to just maximize this showcase, defend his title. It was going to be the first official defense of his undisputed title on Australian soil, and just mass disappointment. But Kenny, in terms of his fighting future, I know you're not a doctor, but you're in a medical family. I mean, you know, people are going to be, you know, pointing their toes in his midsection for a lot of years. He's in his 20s.
I know. And that's the thing. That is a brutal thing to have to deal with. I assume, and this is if everything went well, if the surgeons did their job and was able to seal everything and all that stuff, I assume he will probably make a full recovery, but I don't know. You never know. I mean, and we heard these things with Brock Lesnar, and he had something very different with diverticulitis. But these are still major invasive surgeries taking place to the insides of your stomach. And obviously that is a tender point for a lot of fighters, regardless of whether you have an issue or not. Getting hit there is not going to be fun, I assume, for Whittaker. I hope that he is absolutely 100% after this. But I don't know, man. I hope that he's okay and able to fight like he was before. But this is absolutely devastating news.
Just such a classy guy and such a great champion and a violent, exciting fighter and frightening turn of events for him. But hopefully Whittaker will emerge out the other side. You know, if anyone's going to put in the right work, it's him. And speaking of putting in the right work, Kelvin Gastelum is a big part of this because, Kenny, he had just completed the training camp of his life, right? And I'm not saying Gastelum isn't one of these guys who doesn't love to train, okay? But there's plenty of fighters who don't love to train and be right. He had just put in the training camp of his life. And if somebody told you the morning of UFC 101 in Philadelphia, Ken Flo, that BJ Penn was unable to compete after the work that you had just put in, I don't know what you'd do, right? But, I mean, for Kel, you know, this is just a massive disappointment for him, and hopefully the title shot will come around again, but you just never know in the sport. And for him, this is really the worst case scenario as far as I'm concerned for him.
Without a doubt, man, anytime there's an injury and there's an injury in a title fight, there is major collateral damage, not only to the UFC, but to the opponent and his team. I mean, Kelvin put in a hell of a lot of work. By all accounts, everyone was saying that this was the training camp of his life. He was looking fantastic in training, was taking guys out left and right and sparring, and was ready to take that title from Robert Whittaker. So the fact that he wasn't able to do that and get the belt under those circumstances is really tough. And now he's being criticized, you know, for all these things. It's a terrible situation all the way around.
And, of course, Kelvin Gastelum got hold of Henry Cejudo's belt. It's the only new one that's circulating right now, and he made sure to have it over his shoulder on fight night. But, wow, it's crazy, right? You're dealing with a lot of different variables internationally for the whole promotion, top to bottom. Fighters, as you well know, live production, everything else. So to have this type of circumstance was pretty crazy. I'm not going to let you get out of here without at least making this analogous to your situation. I mean, I'm sure you dealt with some circumstances in your fight career that weren't ideal, but if you woke up that day and BJ Penn wasn't ready to go, not that the title shot wouldn't have come around again, right? But like, you're ready to beat him that day. And I don't know. I just think that mentally, that's a really hard thing to deal with.
It's a very hard thing to deal with. You know, first of all, you've done months of work. Everyone is waiting for this one opportunity, right? To fight for a world championship belt in the UFC. This was his shot. He had traveled all the way to Australia, put in a
tremendous 2 weeks over
camp.
There, you know,
you know what I mean? And you're doing everything to get the timing right? You're trying to get the timing right for your fight, to get used to the schedule, all these things. You've invested thousands of dollars, potentially tens of thousands of dollars, right? I'm sure, Kelvin did. To get himself ready for this, and now he can't even go out there and compete. It's an awful situation. And again, just with the way that things go down in the UFC, it can be a scary situation because you may not have that opportunity to fight for the belt again. You may not have that opportunity to fight Robert Whittaker again or whatever it is. So for me, I would have been devastated. And again, you're putting in work not only to fight, but you're putting in work to fight a very specific opponent. And Robert Whittaker is a very specific opponent that you better prepare for, you know, for his specific style. So it's a tough one, man. It's a very tough one. And, you know, for Kelvin, I'm sure he was very disappointed, man. And again, all that money in a lot of ways is lost when you're not able to fight. You lose all that time and you lose all that money.
And we will never know if they had met in February of 2019, who would have won this fight. First time right. in UFC history that the middleweight championship was to be contested by two guys in their 20s, seemingly smack dab in the middle of their primes, or at least arriving at it. We'll see what happens. We'll see if they remake it. They're not going to remake Israel Adesanya Anderson Silva, but people would watch because this was the no-doubter for fight of the night, Ken Flo. First round just had it all. You know, it's really, truly, as a commentator, one of those fights that you just want to just hit your mute button and just watch, right? And not necessarily be charged with providing the audio backdrop for it. But an outstanding fight. Anderson Silva at 43 years old, going 15 minutes, extending Israel Adesanya in my mind. Certainly a feather in his cap. I gave him the second round. And Adesanya dealt with a lot of variables in his own right that we shouldn't just dismiss, right? He was not going to make the excuse. And finally, the word sick came out of his mouth when I interviewed him on the ESPN Plus post show, right? But he was dealing with some shit early during fight week, you know? So everybody's dealing with stuff, all things considered. Great performance, I thought, for Adesanya, and a nice showcase for Silva in the fight of the night, kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, these are situations for fighters. Sometimes things just aren't optimal, and you get sick or you have an injury, and getting through those things, pushing through and having to deal with a tough opponent and getting the win. It might not be the best win of your career, but just getting by and getting that win, I think is huge for a fighter like Israel Adesanya, who, you know, again, I'm sure he's encountered other things in his UFC career so far, but perhaps not something quite like this. And then having been thrusted into the main event here on late notice is also something else as well. So he'd really had to deal with a lot. And for Anderson Silva, you know, Anderson doesn't always look like he's so motivated for a fight.
Yeah.
For this fight, I actually felt like he was. I felt like energetically he was there to win it. He looked serious. He didn't look like he was distracted. He didn't look like he was trying to do anything else but go out there and get the win. And
yes.
I was impressed with that performance in that regard. As far as the technical level of Anderson Silva, listen, his prime has passed him by, right? I mean, he's 41 years old, 42 years old.
He'll be 44 in April.
Oh my God. All right, just a couple years off. He's 43
we're all
years
that.
Old.
I mean, but we're all fucking fossils at this point.
Right. And he's just not moving the way he used to. Okay? That is clear. He's been fighting a long time. He's had a nasty injury to his leg. We all remember what happened against Chris Weidman when he broke his leg. So, he's had to deal with a lot himself. But at the end of the day, I thought it was a really fun fight between two guys that were not only out there to win, but to entertain. And there was a special aspect to that fight because of it, both with Adesanya, just kind of the way he was out there to perform, entertain, pressure Anderson Silva. I thought he had a very impressive first round. I thought Anderson, like you said, won that second round, especially towards the end. And I think it showed that he was out there to not only win, but actually knock Adesanya out. He was trying to lure him out. He utilized every veteran trick he could in the book to try to get that win. He wasn't able to do it. I thought Adesanya did a good job in the third round, bringing things back under his control. But it was a solid fight overall. It wasn't my favorite fight, but it was a solid fight and a solid performance, especially given the circumstances.
No, I mean, certainly you would classify the fight as more overrated than underrated at this point, right? Like, I walked out of there and it seemed like people thought they had seen one of the greatest fights of all time, and it certainly was not that. So that's proper and important context. No, I think you hit on a lot of good things in terms of Silva's motivation, right? And the energy and being there to win, even more so than the Brunson fight I felt a couple years ago. He's focused on recovery and physical therapy, so I think that aided his confidence, that physically he felt very much all the way there. And those that who want to criticize or go down a narrative train when he drops his hands, that is Anderson Silva, right? Ed Soares will be the first to tell you, when he spars with huge men, he drops his hand and he gets hit in the face. You know what I mean? But that's him and being rhythmic and being a fighter and being in it. And Adesanya is a guy, Kenny, I'm not trying to denigrate the power, but he's just trying to touch you, right? He tells us that he's not trying. It's not, there's a different tempo to Adesanya striking. And so I think for Silva, a few mind games, maybe you make a connection and knock the guy out, you know?
Without a doubt, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that that is very important. First of all, for Anderson Silva, there was a time where he was able to get away with that. And he's trying to get you to miss and get frustrated so he can hit you with a counter shot. He doesn't have that same kind of vision or perhaps the same kind of speed and timing to move his head out of the way and then catch you with a counter shot. So for Adesanya, he was landing a lot of those times that Anderson Silva was kind of doing those antics. Now, I wonder, there's a couple things that I came away with after that. First, would Israel Adesanya be able to finish a guy who was doing that, maybe a middle-of-the-pack guy who right. wasn't an Anderson Silva? You know, did that affect him? Was he looking across from the octagon and saying, I'm going to give him way too much respect because it's Anderson Silva? Or was it Israel Adesanya's style to kind of poke and prod and look for that opening and not do something stupid? And right. I think you're right. I think that's, for the most part, Israel Adesanya's style. He does not make a lot of, you know, bold or risky moves, as you should do when you have 4 ounce gloves on. So I think it was a smart move from Adesanya. He did what he needed to do to get the win. Make no mistake about it. That is still Anderson Silva across from you. At the end of the day, you have to give him that respect. You had to be careful. He's still a very dangerous man. The last thing to leave a fighter is power. And Anderson Silva could have caught him. So I thought it was a smart move from Israel Adesanya. Not his best performance, but again, him dealing with a sickness and having to perform there in a main event, really on last minute notice, I thought was still overall very impressive.
You're right about his risk management. And even at our fighter meeting, when I sort of insinuated feel better, he's like, oh, I feel good. You know, he's like, I don't want anyone thinking that. I mean, he's just, there's so much to like about this kid, right? I mean, just, he is literally like, the last thing he would want to do is make an excuse. But in his subconscious, was he preserving the tank because he was, you know, very compromised early in the week? I don't know.
John, if I could add one other thing.
Yeah.
Another thing about Israel that is very special that I think made him a very interesting fighter for me, and I knew he had that potential, was still when he started that fight against Anderson Silva, he brings an electricity to the octagon when he competes, similar to that of a John Jones and a Conor McGregor, where he is completely in a flow-like state. He has the ability to get rid of that pressure and just utilize that emotional content to go out there and just compete and be in the moment and be creative and perform and have fun. Unlike a lot of fighters, that is one of the most difficult things to do as a performer and especially as a combat sports athlete. It is not an easy thing to do.
So
the
hard.
Fact that is the guy that he really admiring and idolizing for a long time, I thought was tremendous.
And I really think when I think about Adesanya and John Jones, and that's great stuff, that's what I think is their biggest similarity, right?
Yeah.
Is that ability on fight night, just big game players, you know? I think that's one of Gastelum's biggest strengths, right?
Absolutely.
Is that if he just has to go beat a man in a cage with no training camp on a night, you know, give me KG almost every day of the week against most guys under 200 pounds in the world. So for Adesanya, he continues to insinuate that this was a number one contender type. He made the walk, did his job, and should get a title fight. Sure, it was a number one contender fight, but the championship fight didn't happen. So it's hard to spin it too far forward for Adesanya. Certainly, there are guys like Bo Hashinya and Weidman who, you know, seem to not love the performance and feel like they might fare pretty well against him right now. There are going to be a lot of big fights for Adesanya. he's in a position right now where I'm not so convinced. You know, it's co-main event on a pay-per-view in an eliminator situation or headlining. I mean, this guy's a headliner or on. I think he'll be on pay-per-view probably every step of the way from here on out. So,
I agree. I mean, that's the way I would use him if I had that decision-making power in the UFC. I mean, listen, this is a guy that I think knows how to entertain. He's got an exciting style. It's clear this guy could be a superstar in this sport. He's a good-looking kid, you know, knows how to get on a mic and excite the crowd. And I think he just is going to be a very exciting fighter moving forward and could very well be a champion in his next fight, too. He could get the title shot, depending on what happens timing-wise with Whitaker and his recovery.
Right. No, I certainly, if Whitaker's looking at 5-6 months, and I know fans hate the interim championships, but there's a purpose to it. You just have to understand that they do it, whether it's to headline a card or to try to keep a division going. Empty belt it may be, but they do serve more of a purpose than I think a lot of people realize. And certainly Adesanya sold a lot of tickets. I can't quantify how many maybe he was responsible for versus Whitaker, but Adesanya certainly did his part in making the show a huge success. And obviously, those crowds, Kenny, you've called fights in front of them. You know, they're PEDs for announcers. So that was a big component of the night as well. So we'll get to Lando Venata, time permitting. But I want to get to Ricky Simone, a winner on the main card over Ronnie Yaya. Unanimous decision, 30-27 times two and a 30-25 in there. I like the 30-25. Just because under the new scoring system, he's reading the rules the new way, that a 10-8 doesn't have to be 5 minutes of total domination. We're trying to have the judges give out more liberal 10-8s, and certainly one of the judges in this situation certainly got that message. But I just thought this was a great martial arts game plan and approach by Ricky Simone against a very hungry and motivated Ronnie Yaya, who had a lot of momentum, as close to contention as he had ever been. And I just thought it was a real clean performance against Simone. Made sure to not get in any bad spots. He's going to be ranked next week, and I'm excited to see what the mullet man can do now moving forward.
Listen, I think Simone was smart to try not to go to the mat with Yaya. I thought that he did a good job of, you know, stopping any of those attempts. He basically made it a brawl where he would thrive in that kind of environment. It was still a little bit risky for him. That is kind of his style.
Yeah.
It's not the style of Hani, though. For Ronnie, you know, I was a little disappointed. I didn't think he needed to do that kind of fight. I thought that he should have been shooting in from a hell of a lot closer, at least trying to get, you know, a little bit closer to Ricky before he decided to shoot. He was shooting from way too far away. And then he was just kind of just brawling. And yeah, you know, he definitely hurt Ricky a couple times and had some good moments in that fight. But he was eating a lot of shots, man. He was eating a lot of shots. And to me, it seemed like this was a guy that was just not prepared to stand up for 15 minutes against Ricky Simone. That's what it seemed like. It seemed like he went into freak out mode. I'm going to throw hands as hard and fast as I can and see what happens. And when you're forced to do that in mixed martial arts, man, sometimes it works out. But to me, it wasn't a display of high level mixed martial arts. I thought Ricky Simone kind of thrived in that kind of environment. And it was unfortunate. I don't know how far Ricky Simone is going to go in that division. I don't see him being a champion, to be honest, but he is a tough guy that you can rely on to be exciting and not be afraid of any fighter that's in front of him.
It's the wrong time to want to be bantamweight champion. I mean, that division has never been more
top-heavy,
and the top 20 is insane, right? But Ricky Simone will find himself somewhere in that top 15. And you're right. Not a lot of variance on the takedown attempts from Ronnie Yaya. But part of the backstory with Fabiano Scherner, Gracie Baja Portland, right? He had refereed a lot of Yaya's jiu-jitsu matches, and they just seemed like they knew exactly what type of fight that they were going to get. And I think that was sort of my biggest takeaway, and maybe I didn't sum it up all that well, but I felt like they just seemed to know exactly what was coming and exactly what type of fight Yaya was going to present them. And not a lot of in-fight adjustments, obviously, from our man Pahumpa and Ronnie Yaya, but I think they were just up against it. We got to get to Longo here. Jimmy Crute, obviously a big performance for him. Did you see that stoppage from Mark Goddard? You know, Sam Alvey was super pissed about the stoppage, in some part because Alvey's last fight against Rogério Nogueira, Mark Goddard was the referee in question. and he felt like that was a premature stoppage as well. Dana White obviously was critical of Mark Goddard in this setting. Your thoughts on Crute, big picture, and also the stoppage, if you'd be so kind.
I'm pissed because I picked Alvey to win. I'll be honest with you, Anik. That was bullshit. No, listen, I think that, man, when I saw it, I said, you got to let Alvey just try just a little bit more. Was he hurt when he got cracked on the inside? 100%. I mean, yeah. He was not right. He went for some kind of a single and kind of fell to his back, and he was clearly not all the way there. But when Goddard stopped the fight, to me, Alvey seemed like he had his wits back. He seemed right. Like he had his feet underneath him. He seemed like he knew exactly where he was, what he was doing. He had his balance back. So I think it was a premature stoppage. And the moment that he got hurt, if he stopped it at that point when he was taking a beating on them, maybe a few seconds before that, it would have looked a little bit better. But to let him go on and then stop it at that point when Sam Alvey was just getting back into the fight and was fine, it just looked a little off. And that's a tough call. That is a tough call. I have the benefit of looking at Alvey after he gets back up, right, and looking at all the situation, all the circumstances around the situation and saying that was an early stoppage. In the moment, maybe I would have done the same thing, but being on the outside looking in, it was a little early from Goddard. And he's typically a very good referee, but that was a little premature. And I think you put it into context with Alvey actually had a problem with Goddard reffing his fight prior to the match, correct?
Yeah, and that's as angry as Sam Alvey has ever been. You know. All right, last thing, and only 30 seconds because Longo is super sensitive these days about when we get to him on the phone. In terms of this 205-pound division, okay, and you know I get way too excited about guys, right? But Jimmy Crute is 10-0. I think Alexander Rokic is the name that a lot of people talk about as the light heavyweight prospect that maybe doesn't have the number next to his name or isn't a top five guy that could really make a run at the championship. Is Johnny Walker? Johnny Walker Blue? I think he's a light heavyweight as well. Dominic Reyes certainly should be in that discussion. I don't know. I'm getting a little bit excited about light heavyweight. That's all I'm saying.
No, and it's good. Listen, 205 pounds, they need more talent. And I think Jimmy Crute is one of those guys who is a developing talent. Do I put him up there with those guys yet? I don't see that.
He's 22.
He's so young. But listen, he has plenty of time to develop. And the fact that he's 22 years old in the UFC, still putting it all together, I think that's exciting for a lot of the guys, you know. And I think he is going to add some depth in the future for sure at 205.
And we were like 22 when he was born, you know.
That's crazy.
That is
crazy.
Just awful.
We're old as F.
Thankfully, we're not old as Longo. Let's get to Ray.
Now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in this fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Well, Ray Longo's not a marijuana guy, but the last time we had him on the show around 6 p.m. Eastern time, he sounded like he had been ripping bong hits for 3 hours. It's 8:35 p.m. Eastern tonight. But I think Longo's just been training, so he's probably got a little extra pep in his step. Raymond.
As you can see, the clock, I'm high as a kite right now. Are you kidding me?
Oh, I know you're not.
You're running on pure adrenaline again this week from the fights the other night.
You know, I think some people who listen to the opening segment are thinking, I don't know what that dude's running on. But I get excited to talk to you. But yeah, I'm hurting for certain. You know, I put my kids to bed for...
The steam of the Patriots win has been long gone, Anik. It's gone. He's got nothing.
Even the bull and the 5 hour energy and the hydroxy cuts can't bring you back.
Hydroxy
cut. Come on, John.
Oh, I haven't taken hydroxy cut since the 1990s. Might have to go pick some up. Drive.
Get
New England 13, Los Angeles 3. So, Ray. Lot to get to with you, but I want to start with this Whitaker-Gastelum situation. You know, it's hard for all parties involved. Certainly for Robert, it's scary. I mean, what do you think that in your limited medical knowledge? I mean, I just worry about the long-term ramifications of an injury like this to the insides.
I don't know enough about it, but I mean, it wasn't your regular hernia, like they kind of said. I mean, that's really what a hernia is. Your organs push through the, you know, the wall of your stomach, I guess. But no, I think he's going to be fine with that. But you hit on a key element, limited amount of medical knowledge.
Okay. All right. Well, maybe limited. I'm making too much
but
of it.
But I think he's going to be okay. I mean, look, it's unfortunate. I was really looking forward to that fight, but really wish the guy a speedy recovery. And I think he's going to be back. And, you know, like, again, I don't know. I think it was just if it came out and he got hit there, he was going to be in trouble. But, I mean, a lot of people have similar type of hernias, and I think they're okay. So, but again, let me qualify that by saying I have absolutely no fucking idea what I'm talking about.
That's
but
hopefully
the guy's okay.
I pretend that Kenny's a doctor and put him on the spot, you know, in all these different settings.
Kenny comes from medical lineage, so we got to go with him more.
Which I acknowledge.
I'm opening up my own doctor's office. That's it. I'm going to get sued.
What did your dad have to say about that? Anything?
I didn't ask him anything about it. I got to ask him, though. I gotta ask. We should have him as a medical expert. We'll see if anybody.
Yeah, I mean, the doctor, just the Dr. Florian, just went off
the Dr.
In
Florian
head.
Minute. Yeah, the Dr. Florian Minute.
Ray, if we don't call you,
I think he's our biggest fan.
Yes,
he does. He loves it. He likes all of all
you, Ray. If we don't call you next week, and it's the Dr. Gus Florian Minute, just don't be upset. So,
hey, I tell you what. My father's name was August, so they have something in common.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
So
Isn't that crazy? If
you're Kelvin Gastelum and his coaches, right, you put in the training camp of your life, you hope this title shot will come around again, but I got to think that's the height of deflation, right? Maybe even worse than a loss at times because you don't get the chance.
Yeah, you know, I like Kelvin, man. I wish the best for him. Look, these things are unfortunate, but, you know, you can't. Well, what are you going to do? I mean, not that they're acts of God, but they're pretty close. I mean, the only thing, I guess, I don't know. What was the question? Like, what does he do now?
Not necessarily what does he do, but, I mean, any circumstances in your career that you can draw a parallel? I mean, fight day, it's hay in the barn doesn't even begin to describe it. He's been in Australia for 2 weeks. You know, you build yourself up to this one night, and maybe he thought he was going to beat Whitaker this night. And maybe even if the shot does come around in 5 months, he's not as great a position for whatever reason to take advantage. I don't know, man. I would have a hard time with it.
Yeah, I think he's got a champion mindset, and I do think he's going to be fine. And I think this fight will happen within 3 months. That's my
I hope
feeling.
So.
I think it is. I mean, if I hope they do the right thing and they really allow this fight to go on and don't put somebody else in there, you know. So, but yeah, that whole thing was unfortunate. I mean, everybody was looking forward to that fight. Even the buzz in the gym was. Who thought Whitaker was going to win? Who thought Gastelum? I haven't even heard that in a while. So when I found out, it was kind of, I was really looking forward to that. But
yeah, Ray, I agree, man. It's a fantastic fight, and I hope we see it soon, man. Listen, there's another fantastic fight between Jimmy Rivera and your guy, Aljo. How's he feeling, man? And when do you guys head out?
Everything's looking good. I'm going to wrap it up with him tomorrow, and then he's going to go out there with Aya Quinter on Wednesday. And I get out there Friday with Matt. So he's been him and Al just work great together. And, you know, when Al's fighting, Aljo's a great third corner guy. And when Aljo's fighting, Aya Quinter's a great third corner guy. I love both of those guys and really excited for Aljo. And he's had a good camp. And, yeah, it's just I can't wait for Sunday night.
So was Aya Quinta helping him out for this fight? Then was he helping him kind of mimic the style of Jimmy Rivera? Because I think
no,
he'd probably
not really
be a, no,
he,
not really.
Yeah, he drilled with him. We had other sparring partners. He's a little shorter than Al.
Yep.
That were pretty quick and you know, boxing oriented. And but he did do a lot of drilling with Al.
Nice.
But I don't think Al was like kind of mimicking him. It was just more to get movement in and, you know, work some other stuff.
Gotcha.
Aljamain Sterling, Jimmy Rivera, this Sunday night, the featured prelim fight on ESPN. It's going to do a huge number in that slot. I think it's good for you guys. And, Kenny, I have written down to ask Ray today, what can you tell me that I can actually use on the broadcast, right? Because Longo, he keeps
nothing.
It tight, right?
And, gives and us yet, nothing.
Well, the Iaquinta nugget that you just drew out of him is actually something I can use on the broadcast. So
try.
Well, then you got it. There you go. You have it. I think that's about as much as I have.
Trying to squeeze water from a rock, this guy.
Jeez. Yeah, no, it's bad. I'm pretty bad. Well, give me a hint as to something you would like to.
All right, so here I'll pretend you're just a run of the mill guest. I'll say Ray Longo joining us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. All right, so you got Jimmy Rivera. He's 22-2, right? He's built like the side of a backyard shed. Obviously, he presents some challenges. There's a lot of film on the guy. Has Aljo fought anybody similar?
I think the closest guy he's fought is what's his name, Sun Sal. You know, they're both short, stocky guys.
Yep.
And I think they have very similar styles.
Is this like a Jersey versus New York thing, or are we not going too deep into that tri-state rivalry?
How angry is Matt Serra at Jimmy Rivera for taking his nickname? I mean, El Terror or El Terror, and then the Terror. I mean, come on. Really? Jimmy Rivera? That's the only nickname available out there. You got to take Matt Serra's.
He likes Jimmy. I think he had him on the show a couple of weeks ago. But no, it's all good. These guys have been, you know, bitching at each other back and forth. They're always and it's funny. We did a show. Me and my partner did a show in New York City Friday night, and Aljo stayed back to train, but Jimmy showed up, and I thought that was going to be like a little bit of a problem because they're both really nice guys, but sometimes some of the shit is really funny. So I don't know. It's all good. It should be a great, great fight. It's a long time overdue. They were supposed to fight each other, I think, years ago when they were both just getting started. So I think they're fighting each other at the right time.
All right, we'll get you out of here on this. So you are plus $100. You had Kelvin Gastelum to win by TKO, but that fight obviously did not happen. So this week, it is Cain Velasquez and Francis Ngannou in the main event. Obviously, if Aljo wins at plus 140, you get $50 when one of your guys wins.
Wow.
You get another $50 bucks when one of your guys gets a finish of any kind, even if it's a submission and not a knockout, Ray. That's still going your way.
Wow.
So a lot of money-making opportunities. Francis Ngannou, 2-1 favorite against Cain Velasquez, who hasn't fought since UFC 200 in 2016. Who do you like in the heavyweight main event?
Who's the favorite in that fight?
Francis Ngannou. Excuse me, is Cain favorite? Excuse me, Cain is favorite. Sorry.
Holy crow,
Cain,
what the
sorry.
Heck? I was like...
Cain minus 195, Francis Ngannou plus 165. I beg your pardon.
Yeah, no. But Cain Velasquez gets the job, and always one of my favorite fighters. And I think the whole world knows what the other guy's Achilles heel is, and it will be exposed again.
All right, you get $100 if Cain beats Ngannou, and then opportunities with Aljo as well. All right, man, look forward to seeing you there. I get it on Friday, and I wish you all the best. Hope the cut goes well, and we'll see you guys Saturday, if not sooner.
I will see you then, my man. Rest up.
There he is, Raymond Peter Longo. We will get to our UFC Phoenix selections here in a moment, but get ready for some tantalizing MMA action February 15th as two talented female flyweights compete for a vacant title. The 8-fight card for Invicta FC 34 in Kansas City features Illinois' own Pearl Gonzalez and 34-year-old Brazilian Vanessa Porto. And there's only one sports book you should trust with your action for this fight. And please take it from me because I bet on sports every day and I use them every day. And that's my bookie. If you care about betting in MMA, you'll want to roll with the premier MMA sports book in 2019. They post odds on every fight, including props like whether Pearl Gonzalez will last three rounds and whether Vanessa Porto will win by submission. Plus, my bookie's easy to use mobile interface and lightning fast payouts make it the perfect option to bet on the NBA, March Madness, and the Masters. They even offer odds on the Rotten Tomatoes scores of this month's biggest movies and who will die first in season 8 of Game of Thrones. I think my wife would actually want some action on that, but I can speak to the interface, the mobile interface, and just the easy access website, mybookie.ag. MyBookie is the site for you. So visit mybookie.ag today and make sure to enter the promo code ANIK for a 50% deposit bonus. That's promo code ANIK, A-N-I-K, and MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid, mybookie.ag. So you can certainly bet on Invicta FC 34 there. You can also bet on ESPN's UFC Fight Night. Ngannou versus Velasquez coming up Sunday night from Talking Stick Resort Arena in Phoenix, Arizona. Seven selections from Ken Flo today. Let us get to them in the main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights. I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
You think your voice is high there. How about me calling that Josh Neer submission? I mean, sound like a different dude. You know,
it's awesome.
By the way,
hilarious.
Invicta FC 34 UFC Fight Pass this weekend. The dulcet tones of TJ DeSantis on the call. So make sure you check that out. So Team Florian led it 7-5 going into UFC 234. You went head to head with podcast listener Feliz, repping Team Anik. He gets the first win of the year for Team Anik. Narrowest of margins, 3-2. We'll take it. But it's 9-8. We transition to UFC Fight Night. Ngannou versus Velasquez with us to make picks today. Shane Terra. Sugar Shane, how goes the battle, man?
I'm doing great. I like the nickname. Thank you.
Sugar Shane, did I get the surname correct? Terra?
Yeah, yeah. That's it's just a nickname I've had for a while. You got it perfect.
All right, Sugar Shane. First fight for us today is going to be Jimmy Rivera, Aljamain Sterling. We just touched on it briefly with Ray Longo. Rivera, the favorite here, minus 165. Aljo comes back at plus 140. So Rivera coming off a win now, put that Marlon Moraes setback behind him. Unanimous decision win over John Dodson in September. 22-2 overall, 6-1 in the UFC. And the favorite here, Shane, who do you like, Jimmy Rivera or Aljamain Sterling?
This is definitely an interesting fight. I think Aljamain Sterling is probably going to take this one away. I like Jimmy Rivera's karate style and the Tiger Shulman background that he has. What I think his problem is that he doesn't finish fights very often. He doesn't like pull the trigger a lot, and most of his wins come via decision. And Aljo is his finisher. He likes to, we kind of know his plan. He likes to take these down. He likes to get him, get on their back, choke him out, that kind of stuff. So I think he's going to use that aggression, and he's going to get Jimmy Rivera down. He's going to use his striking to set up his grappling and his wrestling. He's going to get him down, and he's just going to transition into his BJJ. I think personally, Aljo is probably going to win at the end of the second round with a probably rear naked choke.
All right, Ken Flo. Aljo plus 140 for Shane. He's won two in a row, including that modified knee bar against Cody Stamann at UFC 228. Your thoughts on Sterling as a plus 140 dog against Jimmy Rivera?
I think Sterling has been looking really sharp lately. I just think that, Rivera with that conservative style, I agree with you, Shane. I think that for Rivera, he's not, I don't think he's going to pull the trigger, but in a good way. I think he's going to look to try to outpoint Sterling, not really engage in any dangerous exchanges, or he shouldn't anyway, just try to keep Sterling on the outside. And the problem is, Sterling's grappling, I think, is very solid, and he's very dangerous there. And if he can take it to the mat, especially if he gets on top of Rivera, I think Sterling will definitely finish him. I just don't see it happening. I think Rivera can wrestle well enough to try to prevent that from happening, stop those takedowns, keep it on the feet. And when Sterling goes to exchange sometimes, he leaves his chin out there in a very dangerous spot. And I feel like either Rivera is going to catch him as he comes forward to throw a combo, or it's going to be Rivera just kind of outpointing him round by round, not being the most exciting fight, but him doing enough to get the decision win.
All right, next up, Shane, featherweight division, Miles Jury, the minus 185 favorite against Andre Touchy. Feely comes back at plus 155. Shane, what do you think?
I think this is a kind of an interesting fight. I think both dudes sort of have the wrestling background. Obviously, Andre Feely's a team alpha male, so his wrestling should be on point, and he should probably have the wrestling advantage over Miles Jury. But Jury is a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, and I think overall his grappling is a little bit better, especially now that he's training at TriStar. And I'm probably going to say this a couple times, but I really like how some of these fights have sort of well-known teams going against each other. Like this one's kind of like alpha male versus TriStar.
Right.
So that's kind of intriguing for me. And I think because Frost the Hobby has such good ground skills, I think Jury is definitely going to outclass Feely that way. Striking-wise, I think they're kind of similar. I don't know. Like, I feel kind of bad saying this. I'm not super impressed with Andre Feely's last few fights. He does a lot of decisions. He's another one of those dudes that's just kind of not great at finishing, kind of like Kenny Florian. So, something that's interesting about these dudes for this division, they're both really tall and they both have a lot of reach and both pretty skinny, kind of like Max Holloway. So I think that'll be an interesting thing. They don't often fight dudes like each other like that. And I think if Andre Feely does want to win this fight, he needs to outstrike Jury and maybe kind of stay on the outside, just kind of work around him, sort of like he did with the Artem Lobov fight, even though Lobov has like two-inch long arms. But otherwise, I think Miles Jury is just going to outclass Feely throughout the whole fight, and he's just going to take it by decision.
Interesting hearing from a fan who sort of likes the team versus team angle, you know?
Yeah.
We talk so much about the individual athletes, and rightfully so, but it's interesting to hear from Shane, who seems to like some of that backdrop to a fight. Ken Flo Jury's dropped 3 of his last 5, finished, of course, by the now-retired Chad Mendez. That was Boise, Idaho back in July. Feely, a little up and down in the UFC, has had some moments. The Gabriel Benitez knockout comes to mind. He's coming off a split decision loss to Michael the Menace Johnson back in August, and he's the +155 underdog here against Miles Jury.
Yeah, listen, I think both these guys have been pretty inconsistent. I think that the way that they match up, I think Miles Jury has the advantage here. Feely a little bit more unorthodox, but I think he moves a little bit better. He moves a lot better laterally. I think Jury probably has the cleaner skills overall. I think he's definitely more dangerous on the mat. I'll go with Jury here for the win.
All right, next up, good matchup at welterweight, Vicente Luque and Brian Barberina. I think they might get into it at the weigh-in as well. Home game for the MMA Labs Barberina. He is the +280 underdog here. Luque entrenched as the -350 favorite. Shane, Luque or Barberina for you?
I'm actually really excited about this fight. This one and one or two others I think are going to be really, really great. I think this fight has a possible performance of the night all over it for whoever wins. Personally, I think Vicente Luque is going to win this fight. He's probably going to do it near the end of the fight, maybe third round with a submission. But I think that Brian Barberina is, I mean, obviously the odds have him as the underdog, but I think because of that, he has a really good chance of pulling this one out. Vicente Luque, the dude's really, really good. He's got good striking. He's got power. His ground game is really great. He's got great BJJ. I think he's a brown belt. But Brian Barberina, man, that dude fucking hits really hard. If he can kind of stay on the outside a little bit, he has a really good chance of knocking out Vicente. I think I had one more note about that. So I think the overall quality of fighters that Brian Barberina has fought in the UFC is a little bit better than what Vicente has fought. And I think that experience, his experience with those more elite level fighters actually gives him a really good chance. And I kind of wish the odds were a little bit closer. But like I said, I think Vicente is going to, he's going to pull this one out. He's on a streak, and that dude's just, he's a killer, man.
Ken Flo Luque has won 3 straight, 6 of his last 7, and I think most saliently, all of them finishes, just puts guys away. Most recently knocked out Chad Laprise, then Jalen Turner at UFC 229 in October. Barberina, also a finisher. He's got some pops to stop both Ellenberger brothers, Jake in August, good for his 5th UFC win. +280, it seems to be a swollen price. The question is that enough to entice the flow to the Barberina side?
For some reason, I see like sticky notes all over Shane's computer. All just kind of like, all right, Luque got him, little picture of him, like a stick figure of Luque up there, notes underneath. All right, well, listen, I'm going to go with Luque. I think that he is the more dangerous fighter. I think Barberina, yes, he does hit hard. He has an excellent chin as well. I don't see him being particularly skillful, though, you know, but he is a tough guy. And if Luque decides to kind of get crazy and brawl, I agree with Shane that he basically ups his chances of getting knocked out. So Luque has to be very careful in this fight. He's got to use his leg game, keep Barberina on the outside, and then possibly get to a tie clinch or look for a takedown where he can have the advantage if he can put Barberina on his back. I think Luque is going to win this one.
All right, next up, with no shortage of hype behind him, Crone Gracie making his UFC debut. Ooh, he will do so as a minus 330 favorite against the UFC-tested and well-traveled Alex Caceres. He comes back plus 265. Shane, who do you like here?
Oh, man, I am so excited to see Crone Gracie come back. Or, I'm sorry, Crone Gracie to come to the UFC. For me, this is super, super interesting because this is the first Gracie we've seen in the UFC in a while. You know, Neiman Gracie is over in Bellator, which is great. But I think he was married in. I don't think he's technically like an actual Gracie. So it's really cool to see like a young Gracie coming in. He's debuting on the main card, which I think is really, really big. It's really exciting for him. Fight-wise itself, I think it's really interesting that it's two southpaws. I don't think Crone has a ton of experience fighting other southpaws. Unlike Alex Caceres, who has literally six times the fight experience that Crone has. And most of Caceres' opponents are, in my opinion, a much higher level than some of the dudes that Crone was fighting. Pick-wise, I think Crone is probably going to win this fight. He does take a lot of damage when you're doing stand-up, and his stand-up is okay. But I think what he's going to do is probably near the end of the first round, he's going to get Alex down, and he's probably going to take him out with a rear naked choke. I think the biggest variable for this fight is going to be Crone adjusting to the new rules. And Ryzen, they have the 10-minute first round and the 2 5-minute rounds after that. So I think him adjusting to the 3 5-minute rounds is going to be probably his biggest problem.
Ken Flo Caceres, 20th UFC appearance. Pretty remarkable given where he's been at times in this UFC career. Coming off a win, that was against Martin Bravo way back in July. Gracie, 4-0, hasn't fought professionally in MMA since 2016. What can you tell us about Ice Cream Crone Gracie?
I've actually trained with both of these guys. I trained with Caceres a long time ago when he was just getting started in his MMA career, his UFC career, I should say. So I don't want to make a judgment based on that. He has improved a great deal. And, you know, I think that clearly he's got to keep this on the feet if he wants a chance at beating Crone Gracie. And even then, I think Crone is improving a lot on the feet. I actually saw Crone a few weeks ago right down the street from my house. Actually, he was with Nate Diaz hanging out. So Nate Diaz has been training with him. And Crone is the type of guy, John, who never stops training. This guy has that same mindset as a Nate Diaz where he's always getting ready for something, whether it's a triathlon or just training nonstop. His training sessions are the real deal Holyfield, for sure. This guy trains like an absolute animal. Crone is always training. He's always ready. He's been working very hard on his striking skills. I think they will be dialed in for this fight. I see Crone Gracie getting the win in around the end of the second round by rear naked choke.
And reports are Nate Diaz will be firmly in the corner of Crone Gracie in Phoenix, Arizona this weekend. All right, got to move, fellas. Featured bout in the strawweight division here. Calvillo, Casey, Cynthia Calvillo, prohibitive favorite, minus 290. Courtney Casey getting a home game here, born and raised in Arizona. She's plus 235. Shane, Calvillo or Casey for you?
With this fight, Courtney Casey definitely has the better stand-up, and she has I think she has a possibility of pulling it out, but I think Calvillo overall is just gonna destroy her. She's got real dirty boxing. I think she's gonna get in with some striking, clinch her up, take her down, and then just grind it out. I don't think she's gonna finish this because Courtney Casey is really tough, but I think Calvillo will probably get this one via decision.
Ken Flo, Courtney Casey, you got to respect the former soccer standouts, right? Played soccer collegiately at the University of Texas, El Paso, if memory serves. Last three fights have all gone to split decisions. Last one did go her way. That was against Angela Hill. I like the potential for Casey. I like her frame. But here it's her 10th UFC appearance, Kenny, and I still think she's trying to put it all together, you know?
John, everybody knows soccer players are the toughest athletes walking
Goddamn right.
We all know that. It's clear. You watch one soccer game and you know that. listen, I got to say, Casey, I think she hits harder than Calvillo. I don't know if she's the better striker, though. I think she does probably hit hard, harder. I think Calvillo moves a little bit better on the feet. I think she's going to be way better on the ground. The way that she puts it all together, I think Calvillo will get the win in enemy territory.
All right, co-main event. This line has moved a little bit, but our line is Paul Felder, minus 125, slight favorite against James Vick, who is a plus 105 underdog. Felder's been out for a while, had surgery after the split decision loss to Platinum Mike Perry last July. Now he returns against Vic. Vic's won 4 of his last 5, knocked out, though, by Justin Gaethje in what was the main event last August. Good co-main event, high stakes at lightweight. Felder, Vic, Shane, who do you like?
I mean, I got to tell you, I'm going to try not to take too long on this one because I had the most fun breaking this one down. I'm most excited for this fight. It's probably going to be fight of the night. I am a little partial to this because the guy that trains me at my Muay Thai gym used to train Paul Felder, and he cornered him a couple times. But I think if James Vick doesn't work his range and stay on the outside and just use a lot of jabs and a lot of kicks and pressure, I think Paul Felder is going to fucking kill him in the first round. I think it's probably going to be first round knockout. Paul Felder is just a monster.
I think there's a lot of truth in there, at least in terms of Felder as a monster, Kenny. I mean, it's such a systematic weight cut. I think he's as big a power threat as there is at 155 pounds. You know, I'm high on Vic as well. Love the frame. I like the work ethic. What do you think? Close fight according to Vegas.
Yeah, you know, I think that for James Vick, I think he has a real big-time fundamental flaw, and it's the dropping of those hands and standing way too tall. It just makes him super susceptible to overhands and hooks, and I think that Felder, watching Vic's last fight against Gaethje, is going to see something that he can exploit. And sometimes Felder, I think, takes an interesting approach to fight. Sometimes, maybe a lot of times, I feel like Felder makes it more difficult than it needs to be. I think that Felder still hasn't shown his true potential in the UFC in a lot of ways. I think Felder has a lot of good things going for him, but sometimes can be a little bit more efficient when he fights. That said, I think Felder does get the win. I think he has less weaknesses. I think he has more weapons than Vic, and I think he gets it done.
All right, main event could determine the next heavyweight title challenger. That remains to be seen. Cain Velasquez returning. Cannot wait to see this. For the first time since July 9, 2016. Stopped Travis Brown that night at UFC 200. He's only fought twice since 2013. Still entrenched as the favorite here, though. Minus 195. Francis Ngannou coming back at plus 165. Shane, as this is the main event, we will need the round and the method of victory. Who wins the headliner Sunday night in Phoenix?
This fight's pretty exciting. It actually has a lot of questions for me. Like, why is Cain unranked and he's fighting number 3? Like, I get that he needs a tune-up fight. That just seems kind of weird. This fight I didn't even really need to break down, to be honest with you. I think Cain is going to tear Francis apart. I feel like it's probably going to be in the second round. He's going to finish him by TKO, but, I mean, there's a possibility for I guess I'm going to pick second round TKO. There's obviously a chance Francis can knock him out. We all know that. The dude hits really, really fucking hard. He did stop Curtis Blaydes, who is a great wrestler, but they didn't get to go super long, so we didn't get to see his takedown defense, you know. But I think Cain's definitely going to get this one.
Yeah, I think that's an important point in terms of the length or lack thereof of the fight between Francis Ngannou and Curtis Blaydes. Shane Terror, man, great job, dude. Appreciate the enthusiasm, the prep. Thanks for coming on, and time permitting, we'll have you back before the year's out, bud. Great job.
That'll be awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, Shane Terror making picks for Team Anik today. All right, Kenny, main event, Cain Velasquez, Francis Ngannou. So the win over Curtis Blaydes, like on paper, he does have a win now over the most accomplished takedown artist in UFC heavyweight history, right? No UFC heavyweight has more takedowns than Curtis Blaydes, but it was a very short fight, obviously. What do you think about Cain Velasquez, the layoff, his prospects as 2-1 favorite against Francis Ngannou?
You know what was kind of scary? I went back and watched some of Ngannou's fights. I went back and watched, you know, some of Cain's fights. You know, we haven't seen Cain compete in a little while. Obviously, I know both of them very well, but I wanted to be prepared for this podcast.
I love it. Music to my ears.
Went back and watched the fight against Curtis Blaydes. Yeah, I thought that the exact punch that Junior Dos Santos caught Cain Velasquez with in their first fight is the exact same punch that Ngannou caught Curtis Blaydes with. Watch that fight. It is crazy. It's the exact same shot. Looks like the exact same sequence. The way that they dropped, he hit him right on the side of the ear. For those that are listening to the podcast, go and check that out. Watch those two fights in the finish of Dos Santos in the first one against Cain and the one that Ngannou just beat Blaydes with in the rematch. It was very interesting. That scared me a little bit. It also scares me a little bit that sometimes Cain Velasquez will trade in the pocket. If he wants to be able to land and set up his takedown, he needs to put himself in the pocket and throw hands against Ngannou to get the respect so he can get a clean shot on those legs. If he gets in on the leg of Ngannou, I think the fight is over. I think Cain takes him down. I don't think that Ngannou is going to be able to get up many times after that. If he does, Cain is very good at returning you right back down to the mat and pressuring you, getting his head over your head so you can't do that again. And I think Cain has been itching for a fight. And talking to Daniel Cormier, he said it looks like Cain Velasquez has never left the game, and he is ready to go. We've seen Ngannou... against Stipe Miocic, I think Cain Velasquez is perhaps the original Stipe Miocic. And I would love to see those two tangle at one point, Stipe and Cain. But I think Cain is just going to be too good. I think he gets the stoppage over Ngannou at the end of the first round.
All right, Cain, round one, TKO for Ken Flo. And I love the breakdown, and I'll try to credit you on the air when I get into all of that. But it is going to be fascinating. The first 30 seconds of that fight, I just cannot wait to see it play out. And of course, the cherry on top is that it is the first ESPN UFC fight night. Obviously, we've had prelims on ESPN, but this is the first fight night on ESPN. The early numbers have been strong, and hopefully it'll be a big Sunday night for the MMA leader. But we got to get on out of here. Thanks to MyBookie.ag for sponsoring the show. Don't forget MyBookie.ag, promo code ANIC, and you get a 50% deposit bonus. Sounds like a no-brainer. Thanks to all the UFC fans in Australia, New Zealand, and anyone who made it to UFC 234. Really enjoyed meeting a lot of you. Very memorable live event, so thank you all for that. Sunday night, live on ESPN, UFC Fight Night, Ngannou versus Velasquez. And I'm hitting a red-eye right after the show because my priority is the Anakin Florian podcast. So
you better.
We'll be right back with you either Monday, February 18th, maybe Tuesday the 19th, depending on Ken Flo's schedule. And we'll get you primed for the UFC's first jaunt to the Czech Republic February 23rd. With that, for TJ DeSantis, have a good call wherever you're going. And the great Kenny Florian, John Anderson, so long for now. Thank you all for listening. Until next Monday, have a great week. Enjoy the fights. Don't text or drive. You'll later.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.